Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 14th, 2024. And happy St. Valentine's Day to all you lovers out there. Well, nearly as synonymous as hearts, chocolates, and flowers, this date is too remembered for the massacre of the Northside Gang 95 years ago. Further north in Canada, we remember February 14th as the day the hit was put on the country's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. But whereas Al Capone was never fingered for knocking off seven of Bugs Moran's goons in Chicago in 1929, we know exactly who iced democracy in Ottawa in 2022. Ray McGinnis is a senior fellow with the Frontier Center for Public Policy. His forthcoming book is Unjustified, The Emergencies Act and the Inquiry That Got It Wrong. It's a chronicle of the government's abuse of its near unlimited power over the citizenry, ostensibly in reaction to the Truckers' Freedom Convoy. Ray's articles appear at Troy Media, among other places, where I found his recent piece, Court Ruling Justly Slams Trudeau's Use of Emergency Act, and his late-breaking Two of the Coots Four Released in a Shocking Twist in the Case. Ray McGinnis in the first half. And Tuesday, February 20th, Julian Assange is scheduled to be in court. Approaching the fifth anniversary of Assange's detention in London's maximum security Belmarsh prison, lawyers for the world's most famous political prisoner are preparing for the journalist and publisher's final appeal of the High Court's favorable ruling on the U.S. extradition petition. Steve Poikinen co-hosts Slow News Day on Rockfin and the best damn morning show on the interwebs, AM Wake Up on Rumble. He's been in the trenches and gone to the streets for Assange's release in the USA, trying to spark his fellow Americans to action in the defense of justice. Steve Poikinen and Assange's last stand for British justice in the second half. But first, Ray McGinnis and the Trudeau claque taking the emergency axe to Canadian rights and freedoms. Well, welcome back to the program, Ray.
Thank you. Great to be speaking with you.
Well, it's great to talk to you again. It's been about 8 months since we last talked. And then we talked about your article, Coots Four Denied Bail in Prison in Canada for Over 500 Days Without Trial. Are they political prisoners? Well, now, Ray, it's been more than 720 days in remand. And two of the Coots Four copped a plea. Finally, couldn't take it anymore, I expect. Can you remind us, Ray, first, though, who the Coots Four are and why they're suffering this unprecedented ordeal in this country, free Canada?
So back in February, mid-February of 2022, over the weekend of the 11th to 13th of February 2022, the protests in Ottawa had been going on for 3.5 weeks, I think.
These are the COVID lockdown. We must remember. Yeah. People probably have forgotten what COVID, that it even happened, maybe.
Yeah, so we had all these pandemic measures. We had travel restrictions. People who were truck drivers were told almost uniquely in Canada, around the whole world, that they would need to be vaccinated to cross the border into Canada. A similar legislation was contemplated by President Biden, but the U.S. Supreme Court struck it down. So they said, so you could actually drive a truck into the States, but coming back into Canada was a problem. You could be quarantined for 2 weeks or all kinds of consequences for not being vaccinated. And so it was just not economically viable for unvaccinated truck drivers, maybe who were 10 to 15% of the truckers. But the truck driver said, why? Because if you were driving from United States down to Guatemala or Panama, you could just go right through. If you could drive across, regardless of the restrictions in Europe and Austria and Germany and so on, if you were a truck driver, you could go through international border after border from the Netherlands to Greece without any impediment, and over to the UK and all the way down, through Southeast Asia. So was there something unique about the trucks we drive in Canada, or something unique about the virus in Canada that made it more scary? And even more upsetting for the truck drivers was that the Health Minister Duclos and Dr. Theresa Tam of Public Health had a meeting with the Health Committee of Parliament in January of 2022, and they had conceded that they had zero data to show that truck drivers were spreading COVID as they drive by themselves in their trucks. And so there was this protest, and in Coots, across from Sweetgrass, Montana, in Coots, Alberta, there were four guys who were suddenly arrested, a couple on the night of the 13th of February, and one after midnight, and one driving west from Calgary on the way to a ranch to do some work, were arrested initially under mischief charges, but then those charges were upgraded to additionally conspiracy to commit murder. And all of this was happening within a half an hour to 45 minutes later, the Prime Minister invoked the Emergencies Act. And it's clear from the Public Order Emergency Commission that the National Security Advisor, the Prime Minister Jody Thomas, Marco Mendocino, David Lametti, Brenda Luckey, and so on, and Christopher Freeland, were all pointing to what happened in Coots as one of the several reasons why they just had to invoke the Emergencies Act. And so now we have two of them were released without conditions, Chris Lysak and Jerry Morin, and they pleaded to lesser charges, minor firearms charges, which were not part of the original indictment at all. So it's a problem for the whole narrative, because this is purportedly as serious as the FLQ crisis. The Emergencies Act, the Emergencies Act is the child of the War Measures Act. It replaced the War Measures Act in 1988. And when the McDonald Commission made recommendations from 77 to 81, which were not, they were just tabled under the Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau. They didn't look at it, really. But McDonald Commission didn't contemplate changing the name of the act at all. But anyway, Mulroney, as Minister Perrin-Beatty, did change the name to the Emergencies Act. And so it's very serious. And so you have a Crown that purportedly has these four people in custody without bail for over 723 days, all four of them, on these serious charges of conspiracy to commit murder. And then all of a sudden, one of the lawyers, Chris Lysak's recently hired lawyer after some crowdfunding that happened in November, was proceeding with a charter Section 8, I think, charter application, raising questions about the search warrants and the wiretaps, the Crown and the RCMP. And all of a sudden, the Crown drops these charges. They drop charges of uttering death threats against police. They drop charges of mischief, all of it. So did the Crown have a case? And there's a compelling case to be said that no, they didn't. Otherwise, with these serious charges that caused the nation to go into Emergencies Act, you'd surely want to press on and have a trial and convict the people that you believe have done these, dangerous behavior. But no, apparently. And Chris Lysak and Jerry Morin are free without conditions.
Well, there's something to be said about having a good lawyer, that's for sure. Daniel Song was the lawyer for Lysak and Morin and got them off, it seems, almost immediately by just, making a motion. But has Daniel Song made any comment about this? I mean, is that the reason that the RCMP suddenly, and the Crown, rather, decided to drop these charges because they feared being challenged under Section 8 of the Charter Challenge? Or is there something else? Were they vulnerable in some other way legally? Or do you think politically it just seemed like a good time just to get this thing off the books?
Well, a couple of things. One is, I think that Daniel Song was just the lawyer for Chris Lysak, but Chris Lysak and his lawyer were able to dovetail with the breaking developments that were happening with Chris Lysak. And Tony Oleanik had just hired a brand new lawyer after firing his, so his lawyer wasn't ready to really be presenting on the 6th of February and so on. So there's going to be another hearing on the 20th for Chris Carbert and Tony Oleanik.
But these are the other two guys. These are the other two of the Coots Four.
Yeah, so a couple of things happened. The judicial review by Justice Mosley ruling that the government was ultra-virus, that it was invalid, and that they were unconstitutional in the invocation. Not that the Emergencies Act itself could never be invoked, but in this case, the judge declared that there was no national emergency. So that suddenly has some ripples through the legal system when that kind of announcement. It's different than the impact of the Public Order Emergency Commission, which, despite its coverage or lack thereof, doesn't have any legal teeth to it. But a judicial review does set precedent. And then there also was the occurrence of the popular media commentator Tucker Carlson coming to Alberta, asking Premier Daniel Smith about the Coots Four, and then also bringing a truck driver and occasional guest columnist with Newsweek named Gord McGill onto his show the last week of January. And you've got a lot of eyeballs watching that as well. And
the Canadian government hates nothing more than international scrutiny. They'll go on for 719 days, but the minute it starts, their infamy starts getting coverage abroad, things start to move, it seems.
It's certainly that's all part of it. And with the Section 8 charter application raising questions about the legality of the wiretaps and the search warrants, then you can end up for the Crown, you can end up having discussions about misconduct of some sort, possibly even crime fraud that's been mentioned by some of the defense lawyers in the past. So, whether or not that would play out, in a trial, if suddenly you find prosecutors now on the witness stand defending themselves, I can only speculate. But all of that adds incredible pressure, and so I think that there could be that there were some people in the Alberta Attorney General's office, perhaps, maybe saying, what's going on with this case? It's been, like, here we are today, it's 2 years. We still have two people in custody with a trial date in June. But I would add that the way things go, I mean, considering the Tamara Leach and Chris Barber trial over in Ottawa, you can have a trial date and suddenly something happens with the Crown and its preparation or dumping documents that the defense hasn't seen. And then suddenly you have the trial date moving 3 weeks, 5 weeks later as they all try and schedule things because they're all busy with other cases as well. So this, if the other two remain in custody and go to trial, that could go long into the summer, perhaps. It's hard to know because trial dates can be changed when brand new things happen in the case.
Or even if a judge gets sick or who knows what. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ray McGinnis. Ray is a senior fellow with the Frontier Center for Public Policy. His forthcoming book is Unjustified, The Emergencies Act and the Inquiry That Got It Wrong. It's a chronicle of the government's abuse of its near unlimited power over the citizenry. We're talking today about just how that came down on the Coots Four in the wake of the Truckers Freedom Convoy. This happening way back in 2022, and yet these four guys are still being held. Ray, I thought there was a provision in Canadian law that you, the accused, could expect to be tried in a reasonable period of time, otherwise they must be released. Am I getting that wrong? Am I misremembering that?
Well, you might, being a person of a Western society with the tradition going back to the Magna Carta and actually back to 1166 with an act in England, setting setting, establishing the precedent that when people are charged of a crime, that they have a right to defend themselves and to a timely trial. And in Canada, as it is now, if it's a provincial accusation, then it's 18 months is the outside. But apparently federal is as many as 30 months people can languish in custody without appearing before a court before there are some other possible consequences of throwing the case out because it's been too long. I haven't done a deep dive into it, but I would guess that 3-5 decades ago, even 30 months would have been way too long in the past. So it really calls into question the health or the lack of health of the judicial system. And there was a time, back in say like the 1960s or 70s, if police in Canada, lodged a charge, arrested someone, they were charged with the following crimes, that the police would go and, get their witness list, get their evidence, do all the things you're supposed to do to dot their I's and cross their T's so that they're ready to appear in court as police constables and detectives as soon as the trial, maybe in a number of, weeks or months, would be held. But now in 2024, police know that 90% of the people who are arrested and charged with a crime will do a plea deal. Sometimes because they're staying in jail a pretty long time, they're not making any money. Now they've had to remortgage the house the family has, or you start getting into a very financially precarious situation if you're not making any money month after month or after several years. And so there's a lot of pressure. Plus, Jerry Morin was in solitary confinement on and off for 74 days. So it's quite withering. And so so the police, the RCMP, the Crown can bet, there's a 9 out of 10 chance that these people will go to a plea deal, even to a lesser charge. And so you don't even have to have the Crown or the police really assembling the case until suddenly, looks like despite all odds, this person charged with the crime is going to insist on standing trial, even though they've been offered plea deals and turned them down. So,
of course, this benefits the legal system. They benefit by not having to spend all that money and everything else processing cases. They just let these guys sweat for a while, and then they cop pleas, and then everything is clean and out of the way. Never mind that justice isn't being done. But I wanted to talk about the seizure of assets. I mean, this is a something that went on concurrently. And mm-hmm. And in this case, Mosley was weighing in, and Beaudoin was talking about the seizure of assets of Vincent Gerseys and Edward Cornell and others. Yeah. Sorry about the confusion. Do you want to help me change gears into this new direction? Because my wife wants to know what happened to this money. And if they can go and seize money of political activists and pain in the arses like you and me, did they get their money back? Are these accounts unfrozen after a time, or what happens?
So this is the frozen bank accounts. As I understand it, according to Chrystia Freeland, Deputy Prime Minister, in her testimony before the Public Order Emergency Commission of Paul Rouleau, she said there were about 280 people who had their accounts frozen, some who were not even at the protest, but in any event, it was really the people who had their bank accounts frozen as a result of the police action in collaboration with banks. It was all done on an ad hoc basis, in quote, as the police testified before Justice Mosley. In the Rouleau report, Rouleau said, what could we do? He kind of shrugs and just sort of says, you know, what else could we do but freeze the bank accounts? And even kind of muses that maybe, you know, maybe they could have, you know, not just stop at bank accounts, but why not property, businesses, houses, apartments, pleasure boats. So, you know, and this is really, really a weird, odd thing to hear from a judge in, you know, Justice Mosley in 2023 with his report. Because back in the day, there was a prime minister, maybe it was Mulroney or Harper, but somebody apologized to the Japanese Canadian citizens in Canada for all the apprehension of their property and houses and other things, fishing boats back in 1942, you know, and sending them off to internment camps for quite a number of years. And so it's a very difficult, it raises some very difficult questions about how, on the one hand, it's like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. We can, back in 1942, seize all kinds of properties of Japanese Canadians and leave them to linger for, you know, I think up until even 1950 or so, in some cases in the internment camps. And then in 2022, we can be freezing people's bank accounts and just shrug it off and think, well, we could have gone even further. And you know, at one point, Christopher Freeland, during all that was going on with the Mercies Act, thought that maybe this freezing of bank accounts and this kind of power should be made permanent.
Yeah, she gave a kind of cringy press announcement around that time, after the fact, after the Rouleau report came out, and said she was very heartened that even though there was questions raised about the legitimacy, I'm paraphrasing, of the enactment of the Emergency Powers Act, that the bank account thing went swimmingly. And yeah, now we know that we can use it again. Many Canadians don't realize that a lot of people know about the Japanese internment, especially in this town where so many of the Japanese that lived in Victoria lost their fishing boats and their houses along the Gorge Waterway, a very Tony address these days. But also Ukrainians that were affiliated with the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians were dispossessed. And it was a political move by a competing Ukrainian outfit that Chrystia Freeland is actually associated to. And they the same act that was brought against the Japanese was brought against these Ukrainian Canadians who lost properties and monies and were interned as well. Yeah. So what's old is new again with Chrystia Freeland, at least. But yeah. What happens to the money? So these accounts are frozen. So it's the financial, the way I understand it, and please let me know if I'm going astray here, that the financial institution is told by the RCMP or the Public Order Emergency Commission or whoever it is that tells the financial institution, okay, we want the account of this individual or business or whatever frozen. They freeze it, but the money is just held in stasis until they're instructed to make it available, or what?
It would be frozen and then it would be unfrozen. This particular freezing of these bank accounts is different than the huge crowdfunding, of over 22 or so million dollars, which I won't get into. But what happens is, even if you're like Tom Morazzo was a captain in the Canadian Forces for 25 years, and he had his bank account frozen. He was one of the key volunteers. And what happens is, maybe your bank account is unfrozen and now you have access to money again. But what's happened now is you're red flagged. You're like if you want to go and get a loan, all of the things regarding what a person with a good credit rating happens, those credit ratings for those people are like they're gone. They're flagged.
In the toilet. Yeah. Who's going to lend you money if they think that the government might come along because of your hot head or whatever the reason? I don't care. I just care about the safety of the money I lend. Yeah, you're hooped.
Yeah, so that's a huge impact. I do want to loop back to the Justice Rouleau. he listened to 76 witnesses over 6 weeks and a panel in a seventh week. And he listened to people like Patrick Morris, the kind of key intelligence and official for the Ontario Provincial Police, say that the reports in the news about violence and everything else about the protesters, white supremacists and so on, were problematic because they weren't based on any of the intelligence that he was providing to people higher up the chain in the cabinet and the RCMP. And there were numbers of different police that spoke before the commission for the Rouleau inquiry. And they all said, you know, it was a friendly family atmosphere, not a danger to a passerby and so on. But Rouleau waves away all of that police testimony, assuring us that everything was really pretty calm, and instead chooses to highlight a couple of Ottawa residents who the worst they can point to is that they still have like phantom honking sounds sometimes at night. I mean, and the honking by the 3rd of February was basically stopped by 6 p.m. from reports I've read. Mm-hmm. And on the 7th of February, there was an injunction and it stopped almost completely altogether. And if a truck driver got out of line, the block captain would say, "We're going to cut your air horn, buddy, unless you stop honking," and they did. And so when Justice McLean in Ontario extended the right to protest 2 days after the Emergencies Act on the 16th of February, it was because he was satisfied that the honking had stopped. So, you know, there's just so many stories that are in the mix of this.
And yeah, well, disturbing aspects of Canadian life. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association is trying to mount a challenge on the bank account seizures or freezing of the bank accounts, at least. Are they going to get a court date?
I hope so.
We don't know. We don't know if the government will hear it. Yeah, we're fast running out of time, but before we go, Ray, a huge scandal, this going back to the whole COVID era, if we can call it that now, hopefully to bury it in the past. The ArriveCan app scandal. This is sort of similar, but this was an app that the government apparently spent $60 million to develop. And this was for people traveling, non-Canadians at first, trying to enter the country. What's your impression of what you've heard so far about that?
Well, I mean, it was supposed to be done economically, you know, set aside the merits of having it at all. It didn't seem to assist really anything at all. It was just an additional burdensome, cumbersome thing for people to do to heighten the anxiety of those most concerned about what getting COVID might mean, like a quick trip to the hospital or imminent death. And so it was all part of the public health theater to make Canadians afraid. And mm-hmm. and here we were. I mean, you know, the ArriveCan app was quite unique. I don't know how many handful of other countries in the whole planet had anything like it, but it's very few. But the whole way that things were being ginned up in Canada to get people to be anxious. I mean, there was a report in the Ottawa Citizen about how the Canadian Armed Forces and intelligence was involved in advising, you know, psychological operations, sort of ways to nudge Canadians to take the vaccine. I mean, this is we don't if things are bad, we don't need the army to be trying to find ways to make people more nervous and anxious so they'll comply with things.
Yeah. And here we have invasive technology used to enrich insiders, government insiders in the tech industry. Huge amount of public money wasted. Ray, we're fast out of time. Again, Ray McGinnis, he's a senior fellow at the Frontier Center for Public Policy. His articles appear at Propaganda in Focus and Troy Media, where I found a court ruling justly slams Trudeau's use of Emergency Act and two of the Coots Four released in a shocking twist in the case. Look for them online. How else do people find your work, Ray?
That's that's pretty. I mean, I'm on. I still call it Twitter. I guess it's called X.
Well, that's a little, you're old fashioned now. You call it Twitter instead of X. Okay. Well, if you do a Twitter thing, it'll still come up on your in your browser. So, and it's just Ray McGinnis.